Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington, D.C.
These people have sanctions have been imposed on them many, many times, over and over again. But the war, like I said to you last time, never ends.
An academic from the DRC calls for a review of the balance of power in the Great Lakes region to restore peace and stability.
This is an unjustified and unfounded decision by the United States government. And we know that these kind of punitive measures cannot contribute toward peace and stability in our region.
Rwanda's foreign minister says sanctions will not contribute to peace and stability in the Eastern DRC.
Burundi will not let that happen, and so therefore it will shift from a war. Rwanda, DRC, and then Burundi will be involved. So that will make it three countries.
And Ugandan opposition figure Kizza Besigye faces treason charges in the civilian court. We'll have an analysis. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. An academic from DRC is calling for a review of the balance of power in the Great Lakes region to restore peace and stability in the community. Professor Antoine Lokongo, a lecturer at the University of Kinshasa, also says accusations that former President Joseph Kabila supports the M23 rebels appear to be inaccurate. Thus, following the U.S. announced sanctions on Thursday against a Rwandan government minister over his support for the M23 rebels in the Eastern DRC. The U.S. Treasury Department said it had designated the country's Minister for Regional Integration, James Kabarebe, accusing him of being, quote, central to Rwanda's support for the rebels. But Yolande Makolo, a spokesperson for the Rwandan government, told AFP that the sanctions against Kabarebe were, quote, unjustified and unfounded. For more reaction to the U.S. sanctions and its possible impact on the conflict in the eastern part of the DRC, I reach University of Kinshasa lecturer Professor Antoine Lokongo.
In a situation where we find ourselves in, it's very much welcome, although it's a bit too little, too late, too little, too late. Secondly, I mean, there are many American companies who are doing business with Rwanda, you know? What is the implication of those sanctions for those companies in the mining sector? Who buys the looted mineral in Congo? That's another implication. The third implication is from the Congolese side. President Felix Tshisekedi recently accused his predecessor, Joseph Kabila, of being in Kahoot with the M23. Neither the European nor the American have ever imposed any sanction on Kabila. And that shows that Kabila is not involved at all.
Will this sanction have any impact at all on the ongoing conflict in the eastern part of the DRC?
Yeah, it will not have any impact. Sanction or not, you see they are advancing. After Bukavu, they captured Kamanyola. Very soon, Uvira, and they can go to Katanga. You see? So those sanctions are not having any effect whatsoever because Kabarebe and the spokesperson of the M23 are not the first to be imposed sanction on. Sanctions have already been imposed on Makenga. So, I mean, these people have sanctions have been imposed on them many, many times, over and over again. But the war, like I said to you last time, never ends.
The government, through the foreign minister, lobbied for the UN Security Council and other international partners to impose sanctions. Now that the U.S. has imposed sanctions, what is the general feeling in Kinshasa among the government, and how are people receiving this in Kinshasa?
Yes, that's the government welcomes that. and you have a big headline here now. But the government is a bit reluctant. What the people expect from the government, not just to rejoice over a sanction, but to do something. The people are waiting for a counter-offensive, and it's not coming. Our troops are just running away, and M23 with the Nangas, the AFC, are occupying cities and villages without even fighting. And secondly, the people of Congo also are saying, if those sanctions, if they are going to bite, why is America not convincing its European partner to follow suit?
Where do you think things go from here, Professor Lukungu?
We welcome President Trump's the decision. Like he said, the children of our leaders in Africa, our president, will never come again to the U.S. to study there. He said, why are their fathers not building good universities in their own country? And they will never come to America for medical treatment, because he asked himself, why are they failing to build good hospitals in their own countries? Their children should share the same bankrupt universities with the children of the poor in their own countries. And he said he will confiscate all the goods, all the houses that African dictators have bought in America. That's something we very much welcome, and we wish that Europe can also follow suit. How do we go? Where do we go from here? The countries in the region are feeling that there is a need for a balance of power. That's the way forward. The country of the region should bag together and balance the power.
Professor Antoine Lukungu is a lecturer at the University of Kinshasa. He spoke with me from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa. Rwanda's Foreign Minister Olivier Jean-Patrick Nduhungirehe called the U.S. sanctions unjustified and unfounded, saying that the measure will not contribute to peace and stability in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Nduhungirehe described the move as external interference, saying that regional efforts by the East African Community and the Southern African Development Community, SADC, are already addressing the crisis. On Friday, Rwanda's government reaffirmed support for two top officials sanctioned by the U.S., as well as the M23 rebel group, which has captured two major cities in a conflict threatening the Congolese government. Rwanda denies backing M23 fighters.
What is the Rwandan government response to this measure?
This is an unjustified and unfounded decision by the United States government. And we know that these kind of punitive measures cannot contribute towards peace and stability in our region. As for these accusations of minerals, we know who is exploiting minerals in Eastern DRC. It's not Rwanda. There are countries in Africa that exploit minerals that are even intervening in the current conflict, but there are also Western countries that are exploiting DRC minerals. So this accusation cannot hold.
Does the U.S. Treasury's decision to sanction Rwanda warrant serious attention from Kigali, or do you view it, as stated in your press release, merely as an unwarranted external interference in the African-led peace process?
Exactly. We find it as an unacceptable interference in the Africa-led process. You know that there was a joint summit of the EAC and SADC in Dar es Salaam on 8th February, which came up with a pathway for a resolution of the crisis in Eastern DRC. The conclusions of this summit were endorsed by the African Union summit that was held in Addis Ababa last week. So we have a process on the table. And even as we speak, today we have a meeting of the Chief of Defense Staff of the EAC and SADC to start implementing the conclusions of Dar es Salaam. So any decision such as this kind of sanctions are interference, but they are not productive in any case. Because if sanctions could have resolved the conflict in Eastern DRC, we would have had peace in the region for many years ago.
Olivier Jean-Patrick Nduhungirehe, Rwanda's Minister of Foreign Affairs, thank you for talking to Voice of America.
Thank you very much.
Jean-Patrick Nduhungirehe is Rwanda's foreign minister. He spoke with U.S. Central Africa stringer Venus Nshimiyana from London. In DRC, United Nations officials warned that the ongoing conflict in the eastern part of the country could threaten regional peace and stability. Bintou Keita, UN Special Envoy for the DRC, called on the Security Council to take steps to avert a regional conflict. It comes after the M23 rebels continued to seize territory in the eastern part of the DRC with little resistance from the DRC National Army. Amy von Businga is an analyst based in the DRC capital, Kinshasa. He tells me that fears that a conflict could spiral into the Great Lakes region is real and a true reflection of the situation on the ground.
The possibility for this conflict to go regional is quite real, because the DRC, as you know, has many neighboring countries. But I'd like to focus more on the countries that are on the eastern side of the DRC. That's number one. You know, Burundi now is feeling threatened by those M23 possibilities of spilling over and other negative groups taking the advantage of M23 occupying the eastern parts of the DRC to wage war on the regime in Burundi. Burundi will not let that happen, and so therefore it will shift from a war, Rwanda, DRC, and then Burundi will be involved. So that will make it three countries. The other possibility of the war going regional is the fact that countries such as South Africa have minimal interest in Eastern DRC, of course not clearly stated. Could see South Africa also getting involved, even though South Africa currently has is part of a SADC mission in Eastern DRC called SAMI DRC on a rather peacekeeping protocol, but the possibility of also South Africa being sucked in the war is very real.
People are wondering why the Congolese army, the FARDC, has so far been unable to repel or stop the advance of the M23 rebels. What is the problem, they ask?
DRC military in terms of size is very large, but in terms of equipment, it's not really well equipped. On the other hand, it is also very much quite capable at operational capacity to wage war in the eastern parts of the DRC. That is the second reason. The second reason, rather, and the third reason is the fact that the military, and it is an open secret, is not being well paid. So there is not very much motivation, and a soldier that is not well motivated, even though equipped, will not fight well. This could explain why the DRC military keeps on retreat as M23 is advancing.
Looking at the advancement of the M23, some experts are warning that people in Kinshasa are feeling uneasy about the advancement of the M23, that they could soon be in Kinshasa within the year or early next year. What are your thoughts?
Well, if we can take what happened in 1997 as anything to go by, yes, it took the then Alliance of Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Congo, known as the AFDL, it took them approximately close to 9 months to march from exactly Goma all the way to Kinshasa. But geopolitics have changed, you know. Today, I think this iteration of this rebellion or aggression is seeking to achieve, I think, is to seize the eastern parts of the DRC, which is very, very rich in minerals such as coltan, and maybe progress to the copper belt, which is the southern part of the eastern DRC, where the DRC has the largest mining companies. And if they succeed in getting to the Katangan region, the economic lung of DRC will be in their hands, and there won't be any need for them to march all the way to Kinshasa. That's one alternative. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that they will take the time necessary if the farthest continue retreating. It will take them longer, but this is a very large country. Where they are, all the way to Kinshasa is not less than 2,000 kilometers. The further west you go, the more people are very much opposed to any movement, so they could actually face more resistance, not from the military, but rather from the people themselves.
Mm. What about efforts for direct talks or dialogue to end the conflict?
There were two peace processes, one known as the Nairobi Peace Process, which aimed at enabling the DRC to directly talk with the M23, try and negotiate peace between the M23, while the Luanda process aimed at engagement between DRC and Rwanda with a view to precisely achieving peace. These two processes have now been merged into a single one, and a meeting was held recently in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania with a view to merging the two processes, and then a statement was issued at the end calling on all parties to be committed to peace, but not naming Rwanda clearly as backing or bankrolling M23. So agreements have been arrived at, statements have been made, but the question is, will they be implemented? We've had many, many agreements over the past that only were just that, agreements. It will depend on the political will for all parties involved to get those agreements not only signed, but also effectively put into implementation. I think that's what is really lacking now.
Amy von Businga is an analyst based in the DRC. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. In Uganda, lawyers for Dr. Kizza Besigye are expressing doubts about the transfer of files from the military courts to civilian ones as directed by the Supreme Court. This after the Deputy Attorney General stated in Parliament that the administration has done so in compliance with the ruling. Last week, parliamentarians asked the government to provide an update on the status of the transfer of the files. For more reaction to the latest development about the issue, I reach Attorney Arias Lukwago. He is the lead attorney for the Ugandan opposition figure, Dr. Kizza Besigye, and also the Lord Mayor of Kampala.
These people, they know the truth. There are no files transferred. That's a fact. We are in court yesterday, where before Justice Douglas Singiza, and the attorney general, in his own evidence, the affidavit that was filed, indicated they had written to the DPP to ask her to work on the files, and they were categorical that the DPP would be working on this in some time to come. They were not in any way on record confirming that actually there is any step that is being taken. So do they want to suggest that what is happening or just happened overnight?
Lord Mayor, the Deputy Attorney General was briefing Parliament after Parliament directed that they be provided an update on the progress of the file transfer. And he said to members of Parliament that the files have been completed as directed by the Supreme Court. They have transferred all the files to the DPP as directed by the Supreme Court. So they have obeyed or basically respected the decision and direction of the Supreme Court. Why do you differ?
You see, the judgment was given on the 31st of January. We have a constitutional order in this country. There is a Bill of Rights. We have what we call the 48-hour rule. They were required to take whatever action that was needed to transfer the files or to prefer fresh charges within 48 hours of that decision. Today, we are talking about over 2 weeks. It's coming to 3 weeks. No step has been taken. why would we trust them that indeed they are telling the truth? The same attorney general, and including actually Museveni's ministers who appeared before parliament, they indicated that they are having a caucus tomorrow to discuss a fresh bill to amend the UPDF Act to resuscitate the defunct general court martial. They are playing delaying tactics on this. They are hoodwinking the world that actually they are complying with the directive of the Supreme Court. They are transferring the files, whereas not. What is happening, as a matter of fact, they are just playing these games as they work out the process of amending the UPDF Act to just transfer, not actually transfer, continue with the persecution of Dr. Besigye and others before now a reconstituted general court martial.
The Speaker of Parliament, Anita Among, advised lawyers of Besigye, you included, and other prisoners to follow up with the DPP and the civilian court to ensure a speedy trial. Are you going to follow her advice?
No, not at all. We have no business with the transfer of files. We have no business with the office of the DPP. All we are demanding for is the unconditional release of Dr. Chiza Besigye. It's the reason we went to the High Court, filed an application for writ of habeas corpus ad sub iudice, and we argued out our case yesterday. We are just waiting for the ruling. Look, if they indeed wanted to transfer the charges or to prefer new charges against Dr. Besigye, they had 48 hours within which to do it after the ruling of the Supreme Court of 31st January. Now Dr. Besigye is in illegal incarceration and they have no remand warrants. So we cannot in any way be seen to be like we are betting violation of the Constitution, defiance of the Supreme Court decision. So we are not we are not at all going to move to the office of the DPP, in pursuit of whatever they're doing to facilitate them carry out an illegality. We're not going to participate in that. Sorry to the Speaker, that advice is roundly rejected.
Arias Lukwago is the lead attorney for Ugandan opposition figure Dr. Kizza Besigye and also the Lord Mayor of Kampala. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Still in Uganda, main opposition figure Dr. Kizza Besigye has ended his hunger strike. This after he was charged with treason at a civilian court on Friday. The opposition leader is accused of seeking military, financial and logistical support to overthrow President Yoweri Museveni's administration. Anyone found guilty of treason in Uganda faces the death penalty. But supporters of the opposition leader say the charges are politically motivated. For analysis of the latest development, I reach Gerard Walulia. He is a lecturer in the Department of Journalism and Communication at the Makerere University.
The end of his hunger strike should be of great relief to many of his supporters and many well-wishers who feared that he might lose his life while in prison because of lack of medical attention, but also because of refusing to eat. So I think this is again an indication that his protest was largely about his illegal detention. It is normal that anyone can be arrested and detained, but this should be done legally. But now that was being held illegally, I think that's why he decided to go on a hunger strike. His decision to resume meals must have restored hope and I think a sense of good feeling within many of his relatives, but also many supporters who are behind him here in Uganda.
Kizza Besigye has been officially charged with treason in a civilian court. Anybody found guilty with treason in Uganda comes with a death sentence. How are people receiving this?
Charging Besigye with cases related to treason is not a new thing. So they are psychologically prepared that such charges can be preferred against him, especially following suggestions that have been made by the commander of the army, who is also a son to the president, that Kizza Besigye is going to be hanged and so on. So I think the choice of the charges preferred against him are not a complete surprise to many people. I think, though, what is surprising is that the choice of charges has changed from what was in the military court compared to what has been chosen in the civilian court. I don't have a full explanation as to why this is the case, but I think that's a matter that raises questions on the legitimacy of the case being preferred against him. The
officials accuse him of soliciting for military, financial and other logistical support to topple President Museveni's government. You know, some supporters of the NRM have been, you know, sharing some audio purported to be Dr. Besigye discussing with some alleged financiers to try to find ways to topple his government, which they said necessitated this trial, and that his supporters are not seeing the true nature of Dr. Besigye.
These suggestions have been around, as you mentioned, through that audio which went around. But the authenticity of this information and whether this information is genuine enough to have him convicted is a matter that we are yet to see. But first of all, you need to understand that Uganda, although we have regular elections, much of what goes on around behind elections is more like any military government. So in the sense that any opponent who comes up against the president, whether it is through an election, is seen like any other armed opponent. So I think this is what informs sometimes the choices of charges that are preferred. So an electoral opponent is not taken as any mere electoral opponent, but is seen as someone who has potential even to take away the life of a president.
Some of his supporters, including his lawyers, are saying that it appears the deck is stacked against Dr. Besigye and that he might not even receive a fair trial. Do you think their concerns are legitimate?
I think in the last few years, many Ugandans have been concerned that the judiciary is no longer independent enough to make decisions over cases which are political in nature, and this is one of them. And we are waiting to see whether there will be a chance that this case will be fairly tried or prosecuted. The recent decision by the Supreme Court to declare the court martial as illegal, I think, has kind of given some reprieve to the judiciary that they can be independent even in contentious issues. But I think this case is going to be another test for the judiciary.
Gerard Waluya is a lecturer in the Department of Journalism and Communication at the Makerere University. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
They tried to forget everything they left behind while calming their thoughts in the process. This is what women and girls try to do to cope with the mental health crisis they are enduring amid a relentless war in the eastern DRC. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we zoom in on the effects of the brutal conflict in the eastern DRC has on women, how they're coping, and how they are trying to ease their mental anguish. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
A member of the Zambian parliament says the legislature must find solutions to tough economic conditions facing the country. Mutotwe Kafuaya from the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, also dismissed criticisms that he routinely engages in sarcasm and publicity stunt to draw attention to himself in parliament. His remarks come after lawmakers from the governing United Party for National Development, or UPND, walked out of parliament after Kafuaya introduced a motion regarding the high cost of living. Supporters of the government say the administration has implemented measures to cushion the effect of economic challenges. Parliamentarian Mutotwe Kafuaya tells me that the government must find what he says are practical solutions to the high cost of living.
The cost of living in Zambia as it is now is a matter that cannot be avoided by anyone, because all Zambians everywhere, south to north, east to west, and everybody in between, we are feeling the pinch of the high cost of living. So even though I know that it is against the rules of the National Assembly of Zambia to bring a motion back within 6 months, the subject will come back to the House in another form, because it's just important and very important that as representatives of the people, we speak to the people regarding this very important issue, and that we provide hope for the many, many people that are going hungry in our country. So it is clear that the issue will come back. Maybe it may come back as a way, by way of Vice President's question time. As you know, every Friday we have a chance of asking the Vice President directly. That is, if she's around, she's in the House. Maybe it may come back as a private member's motion, but the nomenclature has to change because we are not allowed to repeat ourselves in Parliament within 6 months.
Mr. Kafuya, the UPND supporters are saying that the members of Parliament from the ruling party walked out because Kafuya always goes to Parliament with sarcasm and the MPs just gave him a taste of his own medicine. Why are you crying foul when you do this all the time, they argue?
Well, I do not understand that. Of course, I heard the chief government spokesperson say that earlier today. But the thing is this. Isn't there a high cost of living in Zambia? I think there is. What was my subject? My subject was clear. Take practical measures to reduce the cost of living. How is that sarcastic? That is what we were supposed to discuss. And if we're going to discuss a matter that is affecting our people, that is affecting everybody in the country, how is that sarcastic? It's more like bringing a subject on corruption and say the corruption is too high in our country. Let's find practical measures to reduce corruption or to end corruption. How does that become, sarcasm?
But Mr. Kafuya, the government has said that practical measures have been implemented, and President Hichilema's government has been implementing measures to help cushion the effect of what you are talking about, and that this is just a publicity stunt that you are trying to pull, and they will not give you that platform to engage in such publicity stunts.
When you implement practical measures, results show. You don't implement measures and those measures result in escalating cost of living, and then you say these are practical measures. I think rhetoric or theoretical measures would be different from practical measures. I am thinking about measures that can bring the cost of living lower.
But Mr. Kafuya, you know that any measures implemented by government usually takes a bit of time before the benefits can be enjoyed by the wider population. So don't you think the opposition would have to give the government a little bit of room to operate?
Let me just say this. Our staple food here is Nshima. Nshima is prepared with corn flour. And if you do not have corn in your country, you can import corn now, and the problem can reduce now. That's a practical measure. If your budget for import of corn was smaller, you can realign your budget to expand it and import corn. If your problem has been because of electricity load management, you can import electricity now, and that problem becomes better. You can stop exporting electricity now, and you provide more electricity to your people now. Those are practical measures. So you cannot tell me that the measures that are looking at the medium to long term are the ones that are practical in the now. Listen, people are suffering now. That is my position. The people are having problems now. So government must take measures which will solve, at least in part, those problems now. That is my issue.
Mutotu Ekafuaya is a Zambian parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera is scheduled to appear before parliament to speak to lawmakers on Wednesday. Mark Botomani is a member of parliament and former information minister. He says the president may want to clarify to lawmakers' statement he made during the recent State of the Nation address. The president and his government came under criticism over allegations of misleading information about development projects the administration has undertaken. Some civil society groups say those who misled the president should be fired or forced to resign. For more on the expectations of the president's much-anticipated agenda in parliament on Wednesday, I reach parliamentarian Mark Botomani.
There was that announcement that was made by the Honourable Speaker of Parliament that the president will be coming to parliament Wednesday to answer questions from members of parliament. I must say that it has been the tradition of the president, this current president, in line with the provisions of the constitution, that more often than not, you would be facing members of parliament to answer questions that members have. So the tradition is that members submit questions in advance to the office of the president and cabinet through parliament. And those questions are scrutinized and they are compressed and they come on the order paper for the president to respond to them. But I noticed that I think this coming of the president may probably not necessarily be to respond to the questions from members. What I've been informed is that he will specifically be coming to talk over or maybe to do some clarifications on the State of Nation address which the president presented last week.
Talking about the State of the Nation address, there were a lot of criticisms or a fallout as a result of some of the information contained in the State of the Nation address. Some people are saying the information were inaccurate or misleading or outright false. As a member of parliament and a former government official, what is your reaction to this?
Well, I have not personally verified the kind of misinformation as it is being alleged. I'm yet to do that because in my district, he was very general to talk about the general projects and all that, what he is doing. But I had noticed that in some districts and constituencies, he was more specific. So I have not personally verified to a certain as to whether what some of the things that he said in parliament were true or not. But taking it from what I have read from various sources, including the mainstream media, it does appear that there was certain information that was forwarded to his office that was inaccurate. That is what is in the public domain. Now, it is my hope that when it comes to Parliament, he will specifically dwell on those allegations or those concerns that people have been making, that there's certain information that he provided to Parliament which was not accurate. That is my expectation.
All right, so Mark, some civil society groups are calling on the president to fire or force the resignation of those top public officials or aide who gave him the wrong or misleading information, and that this has happened one too many times in his presidency. What is your take on that?
I think the president himself is well informed enough to make his own decision on the information that he receives. If these allegations are true, that the people that gave him information, they misled him or they misled the process of forwarding that information to his office, I think he may need to make his decision on that one. As you know, that the head of state and government relies on his, the people that he appoints in various positions, including the district commissioners, the CEOs of various, institutions, and in this case, the CEOs of maybe city councils and municipal councils, to bring accurate information. Now, if it is deemed that some of the information that was passed on to his office was not true, then I think he is at the discretion of making a decision as to whether to fire those people or just to discipline them. But I must say that my experience is that as a former Minister of Information, before this information gets to the president, it passes through various offices. And indeed, if it is indeed, as like I said, deemed to suggest that some of the information was not correct, then some of the officials need to be called out.
Mark Botomani is a Malawian parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, music from African Collection, but first. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Sidanganyiki natoka Unanizomea kupewa haya kuhofa Embu kwa na uruma Sikupaswa ubaya kuona Kama ungekuwa unipendi Uongesema mapema Mazoea na tamu Pala ukisha penda Sioni sitambui Lipila kojema Oko sijawa adui Chom tu chake au sijawa nisikia wenda nataka we peke yake mie sijawa chaguo lake.
Baby, truth be told, it's your loss. I'm quickly rising, become the boss. My baby, she got me on two laws. Stick to my roots and don't toss up the croutons. Hey, so I gotta let you go. Now my zoeo, si lete di ena, si le simzo, si kusitaki pia. Uwali kichanua, nisa. Ila mwana wakiambi, siwezi kungangania.
Wanasema kipacho mtu chake.
See you.
Yeah, yeah. I thank Allah, alhamdulillah, for the blessings, inshallah, to Yali, ain't no time for no stressing, Jam Rexy Fun, La Bonet, Eku Ojo EP, Mekam Lide, I'm dancing on my feet, I'm with my people, my drip so hard, you know today I be my best, and happy birthday, birthday, birthday to you, we happy birthday, birthday, birthday to you, cause I kick it to the Now if you happy and you know we pop, then yeah, sure. Pay to the left, pay to the right, take it a backup. It's a burpun zinza, tuba upandini akwewa. O tanju bi o meta du tuba rekina hewa. Happy birthday.
You know I love you so much, so sweet, eh? You are my heart, just heartbeat, eh? You are my love and my sweet, eh? You know I love you so much, so sweet, eh? You are my heart, just heartbeat, eh? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Polish me up, but baby, don't dust me off, cause I got my own pain, and that always make me tough, like, mommy, holding me tightly, nightly, you like a diamond in the rough, babe, I'm on my grind, so don't console me, I got my fella looking up, babe, cause baby, one of the things that I hold my man.
After, but before we take it there, I want some smiling and laughter. Enough with the chatter, cause we stay low-key. And if you think you knew what you know as before, it's on me. Tongue twisting at your waist, make you pause the beat. Now weka shida zangu chini. Kiku kubali, unazama mahabani. Bila kugusa mina shikaro na upendo. Unavyo tetemea taratiba mwendo. Unanikosha mami uzuri wa macho. Unavyo tabasam na hicho kicheko. Mina ishi wana hama bakina special. Play that guitar for me. You be my harmony. Hey, wanikosha mahabani. Pendeni zame mapenzi ni. Hey, play that guitar for me.
Oliver. One see more of your figure. Bring your face and chop the kiss. Shooting star and make a wish. 50 million for the week. Hold up lighters on the beach. Maybe come close and chop the kiss. Close your eyes and make it quick. I want more like Oliver. Oliver. One see more of the figure. Bring your face and chop the kiss. Shooting star and make a wish. 50 million for the week. Hold up lighters on the beach. Maybe come close and pop the kiss. Dance, 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 yeah. Push, 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 push. Dance, 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 yeah. I want more life, Oliver, Oliver. Pretty dancing, divas, divas, feelings just in me. Move me to the beat. I want more life, Oliver, Oliver. Pretty dancing, divas, divas, feelings just in me.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if patience hides something, anger will not find it. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.